Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Sandy Springs, Georgia. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating Atlanta's heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of Atlanta's elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. It's February 10th. It's a frosty day in Chicago. At least it feels like Chicago. I've got Sam. I almost said Sam and Dave. I always want to say
that. That's great.
I love it.
Got Sam and Lee in the studio with me this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well.
How's your arm?
It's doing better. Thank you. Much better. And glad to be off the IV antibiotics and out of the hospital. That was no fun.
Sure. You're not as glad as I am to have you back for your fair share of the work.
Look, you're already complaining.
I knew there was some other self-centered motive in that. Well, we have somewhat of a light trivia day today. That's the way it goes. But
all right, good.
1897, first time that the New York Times used the slogan, all the news that's fit to print.
Yes.
1938, first singing telegram. And in 1942, Glenn Miller got the first ever gold record for his tune. Do you guys, any idea what tune that would be?
Glenn Miller, that'll be on Sam's iPod.
How about Happy Valentine's Day?
Chattahoochee Choo Choo. Chattahoochee. Chattanooga.
Chattanooga
Choo Choo. That too, yeah. The other one, 1996, Deep Blue, IBM supercomputer, beat world champion Garry Kasparov in chess for the first time. So that's all I could come up with for today.
No quiz?
Sorry, guys.
No
quiz.
No competition?
No.
February the 10th, 4 days before Valentine's, and you have nothing driven towards that date. I'm sure your wife is going to have something to say to you when
yes.
you go home.
Everybody talks about Valentine's Day. We all know it's coming up.
Some of us.
Some of us.
So your point is?
My point is we got a great show this morning. We've got two people from Emory University Hospital Midtown, both social workers. We have Stacy Hamilton and Jamie Duff. And we're going to start with Stacy Hamilton this morning. Good morning, Stacy.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well, and we're thrilled that you're here with us this morning.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
If we could just start by having you talk to us a little bit about where you're from and how you came to be in social work and how you got to Emory Midtown.
Well, I'm originally from Atlanta, born and raised here, so I haven't moved, so I'm been living here in Lithonia now, but I'm originally from Atlanta. But as far as my education, I went to the University of Georgia and graduated with a Bachelor's of Social Work in 94, and currently working on my master's degree at this time. So as far as the medical background, I've been in the health field approximately about 13 years in different arenas. And I've been at Emory Midtown for 8 years.
That's great. Why don't you back up and tell us, I found it interesting when we were talking before the show about your master's degree. Tell us what you are involved in at this time.
Well, I am in the part-time program at Georgia State. It's a 4-year program, and I am about 3 months away from getting my master's, but in addition to that, I have been working full-time. So it's been an enjoyable experience, but it's been very stressful.
How come you decided to get your master's?
It opens up more opportunities. A bachelor's, it was okay for a while, but in this day and time, there is definitely a need for more education and experience. And that's what I want.
So what do you learn when you get your master's that you didn't learn?
It's along the same lines. I just get more experience. I've had 2 internships and currently in my second one now. And I get the experience in working on a different side of social work, more of the community partnership, and collaborating with different community agencies, research and evaluation, technology, things of that sort, versus the micro one-on-one client.
So what are the community stuff that you've worked on for your internships?
I have worked with St. Joseph's Mercy Care Services mm-hmm. and Gateway, collaborating with them to hopefully provide services for our homeless population that comes into Emory Midtown. And because discharge sometimes with the homeless population can be very difficult. So we're in collaboration with them, trying to get services and get them connected in the community with different services that they could definitely benefit from.
Let me back up a little bit. So you went to UGA and got your bachelor in social work.
Yes.
But if you back up a little bit before that, what was it that went into your decision to major in social work? I mean, was there did it just happen, or?
Oh, believe it or not, in college I started out as a music major, and I played classical music for 17 years. But then at the last year of my undergraduate, I decided to go into social work. I don't know why. It was something that attracted me to the profession, and it kind of started from there.
Did you volunteer when you were younger?
I volunteered at Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. It used to be Eggleston. I did volunteering there for a little bit and enjoyed working with the children, and eventually went on working with adolescents in the mental health program in Athens, Clark County.
And I think you told me you've been at Midtown now for 8 years?
8 years. Mm-hmm.
That's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And in social work the entire time?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. But yet you've done internships. I guess those are kind of extracurricular outside your normal work day?
Outside the normal work hours, yes. Yes.
So you're busy.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about what you do at Midtown and day in the life, and what area of the hospital you work in.
Okay. I work with cardiac surgery, cardiovascular patients that are coming in that needing heart surgery. The ages of the patients generally vary, but mostly they're seniors that we do see. Generally, my day starts out around 6:30 in the morning, and I prepare for that day and prioritize my day depending on who I need to see, any new referrals that I need to assess, and patients I need to talk with, and family. So I start out my day determining what I need to do, going to the floor, assessing new referrals.
How many patients are there in a typical day that you work with?
Ooh, that varies. The most I've had in one day that I've seen...
This is the record? This was a record.
Well, it's about 23 in one day.
Wow.
And that included new referrals and already existing patients.
That was an atypical day, right? That was
I'm glad that I don't have many days like that.
What would be the fewest? Could it be like, is there ever zero? You ever shut out?
Oh, no
patients.
See, the thing about with social service, the day never ends; never. It just continues and goes to the next
right.
day. Usually, I guess the least amount may be 8 to 10.
Wow.
But that's
are
a very
repeats?
Good day. Oh, yeah.
So there, you have regulars?
Yeah. Yes, unfortunately. We don't like to see them come back, but they do.
They don't learn, to change their lifestyle?
Well, you know, when they come back, it's usually something very
different.
Serious. Yeah, yeah, that they have to come back. Not saying they want to visit us
right.
on a regular basis, but yeah.
So what is it that, it occurs to me that being a social worker is that's a very broad job description, mm-hmm. but what is kind of the most important thing that you do for your patients every day?
Well, we at least, I can probably speak for a lot of the social workers. We wear a lot of different hats. We can be a counselor. We can be, of course, a social worker sometimes. We can be that friend, that support. We wear different hats all the time depending on what that particular patient needs. And in order for them to get through that stress and anxiety of the hospitalization and to go home.
So if someone's in the hospital, say, for 3 or 4 days, mm-hmm. do you end up seeing them every day? Or
It also depends on what they need. I don't see every patient every day. Usually it starts out assessing the patient's needs and if they do have any needs. And also we get referrals from the physicians. If the physician feels like, hey, you know, this patient may need some home care, may need some equipment, may need to go to a next level of care, another facility, then they will contact us and say, hey, I need you to do an assessment and see if this is the appropriate level of care this patient needs.
What's the most unusual request you've ever gotten?
You know, this is the one that you're telling your
Now remember, this is being broadcast live. Okay.
I think the most unusual one, I had a consult put in, a patient wanted a barber. And wanted me to get a barber to come in to cut his
hair. Were you able to fulfill that?
No, I'm sorry. That's not one of the resources that we have.
Scratch Midtown off my list.
Hair care is important to you.
Can't you tell?
We have some doozies. We have some doozies.
That's funny.
Why don't you tell us, obviously, the day is busy. It's full of various trials and tribulations. What is it that energizes you? Why do you come in to this studio laughing and with the upbeat that you have? What keeps you going?
Working on my particular floor, the staff is great. I love the nurses, the physicians, the PAs. We have a great relationship. We work together, very cooperative, to get whatever that patient needs. So I really enjoy working with them. The personalities are great. They have very broad personalities. They're various. So that's enjoyable, too. And in addition to that, there are those patients that are very grateful to the help that they're given and the care that they're given. And they make it known that they're very grateful.
And so you get a lot of gratitude and appreciation from the patient?
Yes, yes. Not always, but...
Right, sure. Enough to keep you going.
Yes.
Right. The mouse has to get the cheese, you know, or else it's tough to be in the maze. Now, when you're working with... How do you handle, like, sometimes when the hospital may have something they want to happen, but you think it's in the best interest of the patient maybe to do something different? How do you handle those kind of conflicts?
Well, addition to the many hats, we advocate for the patient.
Right.
We work along with the physician because as far as a medical aspect, they're the professionals.
Sure.
They know what's best for that patient, and we try to establish whatever their needs that's going to best benefit them and also keep them from coming back to the hospital. So
Right. We
want to try to do whatever we can to make any arrangements that are needed in order that's going to keep that patient healing and healthy and out of the hospital.
Now, do you ever have any contact with a patient once they've left the hospital? Or
for the most part, unless they actually need something or need assistance, they will give us a call. Sometimes we do follow-up phone calls to see how they're doing. And a lot of times they do come back to the hospital and say, look at me now. And they look so different from being ill and sick in the hospital and then healthy. And it's almost sometimes you don't recognize them.
Yeah.
Do you ever run into them, like, at the mall or somewhere, and you see them out of context where, like, you're like, oh, and, you know, you're used to seeing them in a bed in a hospital gown, you know?
Very rarely, but when they do show up at the hospital, they make it known, remember me. And I was like,
I see a lot of people.
Here, put a gown on.
Stacy, let me ask or begin a different train of thought. I read or heard in the recent days that typically readmittance for Medicare eligible clients occurs at a rate of 4 out of 5 discharges, and that readmittance is within, I thought the number was 30 to 60 days. How many repeats, as we spoke of earlier, do you see? What's your thoughts about that?
I do see readmissions of patients that I've seen prior. the rate, as far as I've seen over the last couple of years, it seems like it has gotten a little worse as far as that is concerned, due to unforeseen circumstances. For instance, with the cardiac surgery floor, we may have someone come in with an infection, mm-hmm. or some other medical emergency that they need to be readmitted. But not on a too frequent basis, but we do see them.
Well, if those numbers are true, you know, obviously it's something that needs to be addressed. And mm-hmm. I know you don't know. I'm going to ask it anyway. If those numbers are true, do you have any specific reason that you could point to, or
it's hard to say, really, because I don't think it's just one thing or another, or one condition or another.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually saw something similar to what you saw, Sam. It seems to be a pretty hot topic now. How do you reduce the readmission rate? Mm-hmm. And you know, I think certainly there's a real push on helping clients live healthier lives after they leave and getting advice. And it seems like social workers would play a key role in that.
Mm-hmm.
Are there you are extraordinarily busy. Doing carrying that big load of classes and working full time. Are there any other organizations though that are important to you? That you know, either charitable organizations or social organizations that you're involved in?
Well, I am currently also involved with a community project, and this goes along with school, also with Young Survivors Coalition, and the focus on young women and breast cancer. So I am working with that group with a community project that we're doing, creating information and booklet and brochure for those women that need resources or need information, that may have general questions that have newly been diagnosed, gone through treatment, and are now saying, okay, what now? I've gone through treatment. What do I do about X, Y, and Z? So I've been involved with that. Another group that I would like to eventually get involved in with is Alzheimer's, and that's kind of on a personal note with a family member that has Alzheimer's. So I would eventually like to be able to be in contact with that agency and do something along those lines too.
For those individuals that might have some form or have had some form of breast cancer and they would want to contact the coalition, can you tell us how they can do that, or how can they reach you to access that information?
As the agency is Young Survivors Coalition, they do have a website, ysc.org, I believe. And then in addition, if someone wants to get more information, they can contact our social service office. And that number is 404-686-8137.
We always like to ask a question. We love heartfelt stories. Tell us, is there a situation where you've been involved in where you've had a positive outcome and have affected the individual in such a way that is meaningful to you?
Well, working with this senior population, I have found that there are a lot of seniors out there that don't have a lot of family, don't have a lot of friends, don't have a lot of support. So when they come into the hospital, not only is it a stressful situation and there's some anxiety, but that emotional aspect of it may not be there from family and friends that we normally get. So I've had a lot of instances where they just want to talk. They just want someone to listen and let someone hear their story, what they went through, where they grew up, just simple things. Just having someone to listen and just hold a conversation with. And that I have found to be very important to a lot of seniors, because they don't have that outside of the hospital.
Hmm. And for our listeners who may be coming out of an inpatient stay or be looking at some type of acute care, is there a piece of advice that you could give them in preparation for those events?
The one thing I would stress is being prepared, preparation for, no one really knows if they're going to go into a hospital or not or what their needs may be, but preparation such as identifying family members that can give support. You may, a patient may need someone to stay with after hospitalization. Identify that person, depending on what the situation is in the hospital, there may be a need for a power of attorney, for health care, a living will, other legal documents that should be prepared prior to an emergency, because those documents can't be done if a patient is unconscious and not able to really know what they're signing. So identifying those types of areas in addition to identifying other resources that they may need, such as rehab, a skilled nursing facility that they may need to go to that they can't go directly to home after discharge. So having all that information and going into the hospital, it helps us as social workers to transition that patient to the next level of care. It makes it a lot easier for the social worker and the family.
You're not doing quite so much education then. You're really kind of pointing them with resources rather than educating and resourcing.
I think we do a little bit of both. Yeah. Most of the time we do that assessment and determine what their needs are and help them transition into that, whatever it is determined that they need. So, but just also education is going to be very important, and knowledge.
Yeah. Well, thank you. You've already given us a phone number. I'm going to repeat it, 404-686-8137 to contact Stacy or others at social services at the hospital. Is there any other way to reach you that you want to leave with us?
That's probably the best number to reach. We do have a website if anyone would like to go on to find any additional information about Emory Midtown. We are under care coordination under that website, and it's emoryhealthcare.org.
Very good. Well, Stacy, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you,
Stacy.
And next up, we have Jamie Duff. Jamie is also a social worker from Emory University Hospital Midtown. Good morning, Jamie.
Good morning. How are you?
Now, Jamie, you're not allowed to have as much fun as Stacy did, okay?
All right.
Well, we're glad that you could be here with us this morning, and glad that you all both braved the elements to come here, even though it's frosty and actually it's snowing when I arrived. I don't think that was in the forecast, but we're glad that you made the effort to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for having me here.
Kind of same drill here. We'd like to hear a little bit about your education, your process of getting into this field, how you got to Emory Midtown, how long you've been there, what you do there.
Okay. Yes, my name's Jamie Duff. I'm originally from Birmingham, Alabama. I attended the University of Alabama at Birmingham. I graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Social and Behavioral Services, which is psychology and social work, in 1992. I moved here in 1993. I returned to get my Master's of Social Work at Clark Atlanta University. I graduated in 1998. I have been in social services since about 1992. I've done a variety of social work, from mental retardation to mental health, to senior services, to home health care, and to my current position, hospital social work.
Was there one particular event, Jamie, that spurred you into the social work field?
I think I was born to social work. I've always acted as a counselor or a therapist to many of my friends and family, and it just transpired. I was just a natural.
So you knew early on that this is, at least in some avenue, that this is the way. That's great.
Yeah.
So people just tend to tell you things. Is that it?
Yes. they tell me too much.
You were speaking about your education at UAB with a major in social work and psychology. Interesting combination. And as you think about it, tell us how the two relate and the value of having those dual.
It's counseling all the time. And then the mental health piece, it just transpires right into the social, because you're always trying to help and you're pointing people in the direction that they need to be, and you just, it's continual support. So they just interrelated, they mingle together, and that's how it is.
Yeah. I'm interested in your perspective on getting your master's degree. It seems like, by and large, social workers are highly educated. A lot of them go on to get their master's. So give me your perspective on that. Why did you go back? What was different about what you learned, and how do you use it?
Okay. I went back to school to further my education, not only because of maybe the job opportunities, because they become greater as you further your education, mm-hmm. with the social work, but I wanted to have more of, I guess you would say, I wanted to have more that I could offer.
Yeah.
Getting the education, it enabled me to be able to present more information to not only my friends and my family, but to my population, be it the community or in the hospital setting. It just broadened my horizons, and it just provided more for me.
Okay. Yeah. We know that that you, or you've told us that you really work in general medicine at Emory. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? What are the type of cases that you are involved in? And I'm sure there's many, but just some of the high ones. And then again, tell us what your day consists of. Tell us how you go about it.
On my floor, I do a variety of things. We have a lot of placement, from nursing home placement to a lot of psychiatric placements. And my day consists of going in, prioritizing my day based on usually what I have left over from the prior day.
Mm-hmm.
And then attending meetings where we discuss all the patient care needs, being consulted by the doctors, nurses, the patients themselves, if they see you walking mm-hmm. around, and just going from there.
You talk about the psych placements. What kind of psych issues do you see, and how are they treated?
Well, at Emory University Hospital Midtown, we don't have a psychiatric unit, so mm-hmm. we're basically referring people out.
Okay.
We see people with a lot of substance abuse problems, alcoholism, substance abuse, mental health,
mm-hmm.
you know, from the schizophrenic end to whatever else end.
How do you deal with the kind of, I would imagine it would be frustrating to see kind of repeat people that are substance abusers, that you go through all this trouble to get them well, and
mm-hmm.
and then they come back in a short period of time. How do, as a social worker, do you deal with those kind of, you know, regulars?
With a lot of patience.
Right.
And a lot of prayer. I'm constantly counseling, constantly providing resources, and always referring out.
Right.
I mean, that's the nature. We're seeing a lot of that now. It could be due to the economy, just stress. Mm. So we get it, and we do what we can do.
Right, you do everything, and then you think you made an impact, and then, you know, a week later, here they come back in again, or a month later. Does it get overwhelming that you feel like, you know, am I going to be able to do this? Am I reaching these people?
It's overwhelming, but, I mean, you just take it case by case,
mm-hmm.
and you just have to be patient and just know that this is what you have to do.
Right.
It's interesting because, you know, typically in skilled medicine, nurses and doctors are coached not to develop relationships with their patients,
yeah.
you know, to keep arm's length. Mm-hmm. In our business, sending caregivers into the home, they have to develop relationships with their clients. They have to care about them because otherwise they're not going to be able to provide the kind of care that person needs. Mm-hmm. Where does social work fall in that spectrum? Is it closer to the identifying with your patients, or is it closer to keeping an arm's length clinical distance?
That's a hard one. We try to maintain our boundaries,
yeah.
But as a social worker, it's very hard. You can't.
If your day consists of counseling, you've got to have some type of relational rapport going on with that mm-hmm. individual.
In order to reach them, yes, you yeah. do. And we have a lot of, we call them frequent flyers, a lot of readmissions. So we usually know our patients very well, mm-hmm. and we just, you know, take over. We just, okay, well, we see you again. Let's start from here, and let's try to go further this time.
Jamie, there's some interesting dynamics here that I'm seeing, and you and Stacy continue to talk about referrals after the inpatient care and treatment. How many of the inpatients, and I don't know if you can answer this, but how many of the inpatients are referred after their acute care to another facility, another level of care, home care? What is it? I mean, is it all of them? Is it 50%? What? How many seek post-acute care care?
On my floor, and it's a 50-bed floor,
uh-huh.
I would probably say 40 of them. That's probably well over 90%. Half. 90%.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I agree with that. Sort of care. Whether it be home health, subacute rehab at a nursing facility, private home care, things like that. It's a good majority that need that extra lookout after discharge.
Mm-hmm. You alluded to the economy and you were tying that to substance abuse, I think, alcoholism. Do you also see depression playing a role in that?
Yes, high numbers of that.
And then when you see that, how do you refer them to a specialist? Or, I mean, what types of treatments are you referring when you see that?
Well, it depends on the intensity of the depression. If it's intense depression where they seem to need an hospitalization, we'll refer out to various psychiatric facilities in the mm-hmm. area, but then we have listings of outpatient resources that we provide to our patients, and that's maybe the less severe case, something that they can go see a mm-hmm. counselor or
that our listener could, you know, if they have a loved one or somebody they know, are there signs that, you know, maybe someone's going through a depression that you're able to pick up on?
Yes, the signs are lack of appetite, sleeping too much or not sleeping sometimes.
It's general lethargy, mm-hmm. I would think.
Yeah, lethargy. Yeah.
Like we're actually going to, and I'll make a plug for next week's show, we have got two people from the Fuqua Center for Late Life Depression that mm-hmm. are going to be on the show next week, so we're going to talk a lot more about that, but it seems like
there's a lot of it in the air now.
A lot.
Mm-hmm. And may I also add that we do have a psychiatric team that works along with the social workers to assess these patients and then make the appropriate recommendations so we can make our appropriate referrals for those patients. So we work together to get the help they need.
Let me step back and ask a very straightforward question, and it's the opportunity to speak of why Emory Midtown? What is it that distinguishes them as a hospital, a deliverer of acute care?
Emory Midtown is a great hospital, I must say. Our specialty area is our cardiac mm-hmm. team. Mm-hmm. They're well known and world renowned, from what I understand.
Okay.
We have excellent orthopedic. Cardio, yeah.
Why is it that you like
right.
to be
as
there?
An employee? Yeah. Why do you like it?
Why do you like Emory?
Very, very kind mm-hmm. place. Yeah. Supportive staff, just outstanding. I mean, and the care is excellent.
And you also get the experience of different types of situations, different types of concerns that patients have. So, and you get a wide variety of issues that can help you on down the line from one end to the other.
So, Jamie, tell us why you do what you do, and what is it that recharges your batteries as you deal with stressful situations every day?
I like to help people. And I'm a strong advocate for services and getting people what they need. That gives me, and when I see this happening, it gives me the motivation to keep going. If I can affect a little change, it's better than none.
Yeah, good. Jamie, are there any special organizations that you're associated with, causes that you'd like to speak to?
I'm an advocate for the Alzheimer's Association. Mm-hmm. And I also am involved with an agency called Intervisions for Families. They do intensive family intervention. And that consists of families with troubled youth providing services out in the community.
And how could that organization be contacted if one of our listeners would choose to do so?
They have... Alzheimer's Association has, of course, a website and a toll-free number. I think it's alzheimersassociation.org. Mm-hmm. Intervisions for Family, they have a website.
And if our listeners needed to contact you, that you could link them up to that website. Okay, good, good. Jamie, I'm going to propose the same question to you as I did earlier. When was there a time that you had a very impactful outcome with someone you were working with, someone, as you suggested earlier, that you affected in a very positive way?
Recently, I had an elderly patient who was victimized. She lived in a high-rise setting, and she was victimized, and she wanted to go into a nursing home. She mm-hmm. was admitted to Emory Midtown. She really had no needs. Mm-hmm. It was a social admission. I was able to find... She wanted to go into a nursing home. Mm-hmm. So I was able to find her a nursing home that could accommodate her. She was very happy about that because she felt safe. She finally felt safe after many years of being victimized.
And is she still in that facility?
She is, and very happy.
And how is she... enduring that facility?
She really didn't want to go, but she knew she didn't have anybody else. Uh-huh. So she's enduring it, and she says she's having fun. Yeah. I mean, she feels safe finally.
Yeah. Yeah. Finding an available bed in some of these facilities can be a real challenge.
Yes, especially when you don't have any needs, and she really didn't have any. Mm. So that was a very positive experience for me and for her.
So what piece of advice could you give our listeners relative to the work that you do, whether it's coming in on an admission or whether it's heading out on a discharge?
The best piece of advice I could give now, especially given the economy, is if you're able to purchase a good long-term care insurance, that will take you a long way. We can't necessarily depend on Medicare.
Mm. And Medicaid in the home is so limited in Georgia.
Exactly. If you're able, please purchase a good long-term care insurance policy, because it could pay for, you know, in-home assistance, rehab, home care.
Mm. That's good. That's great.
And how can our listeners contact you?
At the Emory Care Coordination phone number. It's 404-686-8137.
8137, and of course, we've already alluded to the website at emoryhealthcare.org. So, okay. Well, again, thank you very much to both of our guests, Stacy and Jamie. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. You can listen to this broadcast sometime after tomorrow at ugeriaradio.com. And remember, if children are our nation's greatest asset, seniors are our nation's greatest treasure. Tune in at the same time next week for another great edition of Eugeria Radio.
Eugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and is recorded in the Business Radio X Studios.